Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the Submariner.
Yes.
What is up, fellas? Thanksgiving weekend. How was your turkey days?
I had steak.
Wow, that's so fucking exciting. Steak, there you go.
Yeah.
I had turkey, ham, all the traditional stuff, you know, stuffing.
His super spreader dinner.
I had 8 people there. That's under the 10. Now, the Sunday, I don't know how many people are going to be there. It's probably like 15.
Sunday?
Mm-hmm. That's the one where we're going to have my extended family. But it's out in the woods.
Hope you don't get the COVID. Super spreader events. I had all the turkey and all that stuff, but Thanksgiving, I can take or leave it. Like, it's not my favorite food, you know? It's okay. You know, I mean,
I like the sides. I think I like the sides the most.
Even the sides. Mac and cheese, potato salad, or potatoes. I mean, eat all that shit anyway during the regular year.
We do stuffing, green bean casserole.
Yeah, I don't like green beans. So.
Yams.
Yams are disgusting.
Not the way my Aunt Debbie makes them.
It doesn't matter who makes them. Yams are disgusting. That's nasty ass fucking food.
Tons of cinnamon and marshmallows. That's how I eat them.
No. I ate what I want to eat on my Thanksgiving. Dude, I had a New York strip.
Man.
I had sweet corn,
mm-hmm,
and rolls and sausage cooked in beer. Yeah.
I've had enough. Yeah, I've had enough family though. My mom was like, "Oh, well, what are y'all doing Sunday? You want to get together and hang out again?" I'm kind of like, "No, not really."
Not until Christmas.
I'm like, I've had enough. Yeah. Besides, I need to hang Christmas lights in the house for the kids and do stuff around here, so you know.
But yeah, this was an election year, and I know my parents will always talk about politics, so I'm like, I'm going to skip out. Going to skip out, and I know my brother-in-law and half-sister were going to be there. And it was like, it's like 5 people total, but I'm still not going to go. You know, I'd rather play it safe and stay home.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the blessings in disguise of the pandemic is, like, I don't have to see everybody at Christmas and answer questions like, how's work or how you're doing? How's the kids? How's the ex-wife? All this stuff. I don't have to answer any of that shit, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of good. But, oh, well, it is what it is. But Turkey Day is now behind us. All those carbs yesterday that have a... I'll just say they made some interesting bathroom trips today. And we'll leave it at that. And then Black Friday's kind of different this year. It's like not as crazy. You know, people are doing more stuff online. A lot of stores put things on sale early. So it's kind of weird. I wonder if that'll be coming.
Were there any stores that opened up on Thanksgiving like they did recent years?
Not this year. It seems like everybody stayed closed.
That's good.
A lot of them weren't even doing the 6 a.m. thing. It was just regular hours at stores today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
seemed pretty dead in your store today, Mark.
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
It was pretty. I mean, I was only there for like 6 hours today, but it was pretty slow.
Yeah.
Slow.
I ran into one of your coworkers at the produce department. And says, "Oh, where's Mark?" And then he says, "Oh, just follow the crying sounds from in the back."
He must have talked to Brian, Mark. That sounds like a Brian comment. Maybe Brian popped in the store from the fuel center.
or Leon.
Oh, sounds yeah.
Like a Leon comment.
Oh, yeah, Leon.
Fuck those fucks. Hey, it's true. Did y'all see my that little silly Baby Yoda meme? That like in Baby Yoda, what is Mark's reaction? I was like, my reaction when HR says I can't call people cunts. I mean,
you can't.
Sometimes that's how I feel about. That's sometimes how I feel about people at work. I just want to call them all just stupid fucks, but you know, can't do that and get away with it. And if anybody from work is listening to the show, I'm just kidding. Maybe. So.
Maybe.
Anyway,
I could be kidding.
I could be kidding. And if I'm not kidding, I don't fucking care. I can say what I want on my podcast. So fuck y'all. I love y'all. Let's move on. Download this because I want to get into the Mandalorian as soon as we can today because, oh my fucking God, it was awesome. But download this where we tell people what we watch, stream, check out. What did you guys watch this week?
I'll go first. I finally watched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles on Thanksgiving. It's a really good movie. I went in there blind. I mean, I've never seen the movie ever. No clips, no, you know, anything. No bits and pieces. So I went in there totally blind and thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a very good movie. Very heartwarming. Had some sad moments here and there.
You still want to do it on the podcast in a couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's appropriate, but it's up to y'all.
How did you go though 40 years of life and never see the hotel scene, even in a clip? That's amazing.
No, I've never seen it.
That's amazing.
I grew up not having cable. That's one thing. And then two, I didn't have TV available to me growing up during that time. You know, in that time span. Because I was living in a one TV or two TV household. But yeah, totally. Yeah. Somehow avoided it. Not avoided it, right. But never crossed paths. Right. Yeah. So we can get in depth in it if we do as a feature. But I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I think I saw a couple of documentaries here and there. But nothing. Earth-shaking. Played a little bit of Warframe again because I kind of miss playing that game. Played a little bit of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. And, man, two more weeks, Cyberpunk finally comes out. I can't wait. So, but yeah, that's my download this.
Nice. I made Jackie watch Wild Things. Mark, you talked about Wild Things earlier. Made her watch it.
I thought you were joking in that text.
Nope. I made her watch it. I fell asleep like halfway through, too, because, man, I've been having to wake up.
Man, that's a dude movie all the way. That is no way that's a couple's movie.
That's a horrible movie.
That's probably why. She said she didn't get to. She didn't finish it. So she missed the Kevin Bacon part on the boat at the end. The final twist. It's like a betrayal, and then there's another betrayal.
There's like 50 twists in that movie.
Yes.
Dude, that's like a frat house type movie. You don't show your wife that movie. All
right.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
You propose to her during Hellraiser. You submit your kids to all these weird snuff films. I don't know. A little few screws loose there, Matt.
Just a few. And then my game, I continued playing Destiny Beyond Light, and I finished the campaign. So now my character is leveled up and buffed to where I can compete with all the new levels that they have installed, all the new power levels that everyone has.
Destiny 1 or 2?
2. Destiny 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then...
on PC or an Xbox?
Xbox.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You have an Xbox.
And then... I took advantage of the Hulu $1.99 sale today and watched an episode of Rurouni Kenshin. I'm going to start trying to work my way back through Batosai the Manslayer. and then I watched an episode of Yu Yu Hakusho. So I'm going to start checking out the anime on Hulu now that I have it back again. But that was about it.
So what about you, Mark? What was your download?
I thought you did the Disney bundle. I didn't know that. I really didn't watch a whole lot, but I did. I started watching that Marvel 616 on Disney Plus, that documentary.
Okay.
It's good, a couple of episodes, and some episodes aren't as good. It's a little too woke for me. You know, there's an episode, and I'm not against this, but there's an episode about women in comics. There's an episode about multiculturalism in comics and things like that. I'm just like, it feels forced. That's my problem with it. I don't have a problem with women in comics or multiculturalism, but those episodes feel forced. Like they want you to know that there's women that make comics. It's like, we get it, you know, but then there's a couple episodes on it that are really good. Like the Japanese Spider-Man episodes.
What is the series about?
I guess it's supposed to be just different looks at Marvel comics and culture. Like there's an episode about the unknown Marvel superheroes, which is pretty funny. There's an episode about Marvel toys, things like that. I think that's the other problem. Long, you might have hit something on the head there. Like, I'm not sure what the focus of it was supposed to be. So the episodes are a little all over the place, but it's still well produced. I mean, you know, it's Marvel and Disney, so it's not terrible. That's really about all I've watched new this week. You know, I mean, I wasn't home much all day yesterday. Wasn't home much between last time we recorded. It just seems like I've had time to sit down. But I plan on watching The Christmas Chronicles 2 this weekend since it hit Netflix last night. So,
oh, nice.
But
I'll watch the first movie sometime in December. I usually start watching Christmas movies right at December. I refuse to give Christmas any time until it's supposed to be in the month of, not in... Yeah. Like, I'm not going to fall for right after Halloween, we start celebrating Christmas stuff. Like, nope.
Oh, no, not
until
that.
December.
My tree's already up, so fuck it.
Yeah.
But, it's different when you have kids. They want that tree up so bad.
True.
Fuck the kids. Oh. No, I'm joking. No, I'm joking.
I know.
I remember being a kid. And before we get to the feature of the download this, I have a funny story about setting up a Christmas tree. See, my family household, we don't do the real Christmas tree thing. We do the fake Christmas tree. And so we would have it stored in the box in the garage, for the whole year. But there's this one time we had the Christmas tree packaged in the box it came in and put it in the tool shed outside. So me and my friend, we were tasked with setting up the Christmas tree. And this is when I was like in high school, and my brother was like 10 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my buddy was sitting next to me. We were we were spreading the branches apart to make them look more like branches. And, it's like touching these fake branches. I'm like, man, these feel a little funny this year. They look kind of slippery. I just felt something fall on my lap. And then my best friend next to me says, Long, look down your lap. And I looked down, it was a big old cockroach.
Oh.
The size of my finger.
Damn,
and
dude.
It was huge. So I started shaking it, and all these cockroaches started falling off. It was like, oh, my gosh. But let's just finish the job and keep working.
Man, they love boxes, man. They box in the shed. Yeah, man. They probably all funneled into that thing.
Yeah. It was quite disgusting, but we soldiered on. And then, so we had to wash our hands bad after getting the tree set up. And my brother comes home from school. He sees the tree. He's like, oh, wow, the Christmas tree is all set up. I'm so excited. So he starts running under the tree.
Oh, no.
Just to play under it. It's like, no, don't.
Not yet.
It's dirty.
Unclean.
Yeah, it's an unclean Christmas tree. Well, we didn't clean it. We just set it up and put ornaments on it. We
don't care.
We just wanted to get the job done.
Get it out there.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my little Christmas horror story.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I guess Waverly came in, and what great timing. Oh, I thought Mark left. I just flipped over to the camera. I thought when I heard Waverly come in, I thought Mark got up from the desk and brought her back. So did you hear that last part, Mark?
Just a little bit of it.
Oh, okay.
Cockroaches in the Christmas tree.
Yep.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
I think that's like the 12th day of Christmas. 12 right. Cockroaches in a tree or something.
What, 24?
Yeah. Who's counting?
Right, who's counting? But yeah, so yeah, let's head on to the feature. The sub feature. I mean,
let's talk the new episode of The Mandalorian. Wow. Probably the best episode of the show so far. So, I mean, obviously when we talked Mandalorian, spoilers beware, because that's just the way it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
We thought.
Yeah. Unlike Matt, who is spoiling the episode right as soon as he started watching.
I know, man. Like, motherfucker. It's like, fucking up, man. Look at it. Rip through my phone and rip your, well, you don't have any hair. I'd rip your hair out if you had it. You know?
I have some. But, I have little hairs. Fuzz. And,
so, man, they waste no time. They teased it a couple weeks ago that he was going to take Baby Yoda to Ahsoka Tano. And I really thought they would play this out where they made us wait till the season finale or something. But nope, we get a live action on screen Ahsoka Tano in the first 5 minutes of this episode. And played by Rosario Dawson. And it was magnificent. This is Star Wars nerd boner alert. It was awesome. They got everything right. Dave Filoni directed this episode. Her white lightsabers, the look, the feel. The only thing that bothered me a little bit was I kept hearing Ashley Eckstein's voice. Rosario's voice doesn't quite match the Ahsoka we've come to know. But other than that, she was perfect. And this is just in the beginning. You know, were y'all, how did y'all feel those first 5 minutes?
Just like it started off strong. I'm like, man, you're throwing the straight flush right out of the gate, you know, and just starting with your strongest card. I was just, wow.
Oh, you're talking about poker. I thought you were talking about the toilet or something, straight flush or something. Like,
no. Okay. But man, I felt like the episode,
like, wow, I guess Matt hated it. No.
wow, flush it. No.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And then just her being very stealthful in the mist and taking them out one by one. Just very, very Jedi-y, you know.
Yeah. My only second beef with this episode, and it's not Ahsoka, because she's awesome. So let's move before I say that. So the Mandalorian shows up, and he's searching, obviously, for the Jedi, and he comes across the township there on Corvus, and it's being run by a ruthless lady, a magistrate who has a pass with Ahsoka, as we discovered at the beginning. So the magistrate wants to hire him to kill the Jedi. And of course doesn't kill her. He goes out into the woods looking for her and comes across Ahsoka, and they meet. And, this is where a lot of things happen. Especially reveals pertaining to the child. We discover he has a name, and, Grogu.
It's Grogu.
Grogu.
Grogu, that's right.
At first I thought it was Goku, and then
we get a huge name drop. As Ahsoka says, she's only seen one other species like this, and that was, she drops Yoda's name. We get some very playful moments between his Jedi training and we find out that he was alive during the Clone Wars, the child. So there's a lot that happens in these brief few minutes that are significant, you know, to the story.
What was your beef?
My beef is another episode where the Mandalorian is told, well, if you do this for me, I'll do this for you. That's happened like four times already this season, you know? So Ahsoka's like, I'll help the child if you help me. You know, it happened last week. Take out the base for us. It happened the week before that. It's just like, it's a bit of a story trap. You know, it's like, come on, guys. Can't think of a little bit something different to move the plot. You have to admit, it's pretty repetitive. You know?
Yeah.
But there's so much badassness in this episode that it makes up for that. The fights at the end as they go in to take out the magistrate. Another huge freaking name drop from Ahsoka in the last few minutes where she's looking for Grand Admiral Thrawn, and the great thing about this is it ties into Rebels and the Clone Wars. And of course, at the end of Star Wars Rebels, her and Ezra jump through the hyperspace looking for Admiral Thrawn. We don't know what Ezra did. And then, of course, at the end of Rebels, Ahsoka's looking for Admiral Thrawn. So 6 years later, after the Battle for Endor, she's still looking for Admiral Thrawn. So that was pretty huge. God, can you imagine if we get a live-action Thrawn, too? Holy shit.
Yeah.
But,
So does that mean that we'll eventually see Moff Gideon and Admiral Thrawn together in the same
scene? I'm wondering.
That would be.
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. Can we get that? We could get a live-action Ezra if he shows back up. I mean, they opened up so much with this episode. And it's so well done. Like Matt was saying, the way it's shot with Ahsoka being stealthy. I love the scene where she's behind the guys and her lightsaber lights up. That was badass.
Yeah. And they just, you can tell the guys are like, just feared. Like, where is she? use your scope.
She's such a popular character in Star Wars culture that to see her come to life on the big screen is pretty incredible and a huge movement forward in the current Star Wars universe, you know. And it almost, seeing her on screen almost overshadows the importance of giving the child a name in his background, because we're so focused on like, holy shit, I'm seeing Ahsoka on screen, you know. And
yeah.
I don't know if it's beef, but there's something that I noticed that, you know, there was a recurring theme of that there wasn't in this film, and I'm wondering why there wasn't. Everywhere he goes, it seems like, you know, trouble comes and they know that the child is the child, and how does he walk into a seemingly Imperial-controlled base if this woman has ties to Thrawn, and they don't know that there was a Mandalorian in Beskar armor that sieged another Imperial base and took a high-prize bounty from Imperials. How do they not know that this could be the guy?
They never gave any indication the Magistrate was working with the Empire. They seem to be like their own kind of operation. You know,
maybe so.
Yeah, like a subcontractor.
Yeah, Ahsoka just thinks she knows the whereabouts of Thrawn. But yeah, they never gave any indication that they worked with the Empire, though.
Yeah, there were no stormtroopers, so yeah.
I guess I was just expecting it because they're like, "Are you a Mandalorian?" Or like, you know, first they're like, "Are you Guild? Are you Mandalorian?" And it's like, "Uh oh, here we go." They'll be like, "Where's the child? Where's the asset? Such a large bounty." In such a small package.
I don't even know what you're talking about anymore.
Oh, that was my impersonation of the old German dude from the first season. You know, asset.
That was the worst German accent I've ever heard. And there's a guy who does the Arnold impression, so you can't do a simple German accent.
I do a good Hoff Gideon, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't mess with the Hoff. Don't hassle the Hoff, no.
But anyway, we only have three episodes left. I'm hoping that's not the last we see of Ahsoka, but I have a feeling it might be.
Is it only eight episodes?
Yeah, it's eight episodes again this year, I believe. Unless it's nine this year. Let me see.
Oh, it was 10.
My son made a bold prediction that Yoda finds them. Or not Yoda finds them. That Luke finds them. That Luke is the Jedi that finds.
Yes, so we're only eight episodes again this year.
Oh, eight. Yeah.
Nah, I don't think we're going to see Luke. I think they're going to stay in the realms of possibly the cartoons and things like that. But yeah. I don't think we're going to
go there. I wonder if that's how they tie Ezra in, you know?
Possibly.
That would be cool.
Ezra would be a little bit older at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully less annoying.
Yeah.
He kind of got a little annoying.
Oh, when he got older.
It's a kid's show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see where it goes from here.
But yeah, it's a solid A for me for the episode.
Oh, yeah.
How about you, Matt?
It's an A.
Yeah, I thought it was the best episode of the show so far. And I really liked episode 3 of season 1 where all the Mandalorians fly in and are helping them. I thought that was really great, but this might be the best episode of the show.
It's good to see the lightsaber in action on the TV production as well. They did a really good job.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And Michael
the choreography.
Bean. Michael Bean. We forgot Michael Bean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael Bean was pretty cool. But, you know, he was just a merc. So, not much for him to chew on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting how the choreography was good, but not great. You know, not up to the standard that we're used to, but it's still solid.
Yeah.
Solid episode all around. You know, yeah. So we'll hopefully this is kind of like Disney's little test to see if they'll launch a Ahsoka Disney Plus series as well to see how she's received.
Yeah.
So there's that possibility too that they're testing the waters for a live action Ahsoka show.
There are definitely a few characters I'd like to see a spinoff trilogy on, or spinoff show on.
Yeah, I bet one of them's those sea cows that squirt blue milk, huh? Right, Matt? Is that what you're wanting?
Yep. And then Luke Skywalker just walks up there and just, this is refreshing nipple milk, whatever.
No, that's you. No. That's you. You're going to try to get yourself cast in that show. That's all you're going to do. You're just going to drink the udder of the sea cows and spray yourself in the face of it.
Like it's a friggin' Herbal Essences commercial and I'm just bathing it.
You're going to have a blue milk bukkake show.
Blue milk bukkake.
So, anyways.
Wow.
On that note, let's move on to today's feature film. A really good movie from 95 or 96? I don't remember.
95.
95. Mm-hmm. Starring Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman and directed by the late, great Tony Scott. We are talking Crimson Tide today. Who wants to summarize this movie?
I'll summarize. Crimson Tide is about a new first officer who arrives on his new ship assignment called the USS Alabama, captained by Gene Hackman. And they both actually get along pretty well. And Denzel Washington's character is a student alumnus from Harvard. And Gene Hackman's character was a captain who's like, you know, a veteran of combat and a lifelong Navy sailor, a career sailor. And they embark on their deployment in the middle of the Aleutian Oceans, I think, near the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they're all put on DEFCON 3 or Red Alert that some Russian rebels have seized control of a nuclear base. and it's a battle of wits and wills. Because in the middle of combat, they receive a message whether to fire the missiles. But the message comes through the submarine as incomplete. And basically, the whole movie is a test of wills and who's right, who's wrong. The message is so incomplete, they don't know whether to abort the firing of the submarine's nuclear missiles or to abort. Or did I repeat myself?
Yes.
I did.
Somewhat.
Yeah, somewhat, yeah. But they were debating whether to fire the missiles or to abort firing the missiles.
But also held by Captain Ramsey, though. He wants to fire the missiles because he believes that's his last order. That's what he should do. Where Hunter believes that, maybe we should wait just in case there's other submarines out there. That's what we have them for. We can't be wrong about this because it's a decision that could affect the world.
Yeah, he's like, it'll start World War III if we launch those missiles and they've surrendered.
No, it'll start a nuclear holocaust.
Right. Yeah, nuclear holocaust, yeah.
An interesting note is the United States Navy did not like this movie script and refused to cooperate with it. Because they felt it was a little too, they felt it hit a little too close to home, I guess, and how things operate.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't like the script because the original version of the script had the USS Alabama's launch computer malfunction.
Oh,
okay. Yeah,
they didn't like the script because of that.
Yeah, so they used the French vessel. Yeah.
No, the writers reworked the script to have it where the communications array was busted in the middle of combat, and then it was basically a morality contest between Captain Ramsey and the Denzel's
Hunter.
XO. Yeah. Hunter, yeah, thank you, Lieutenant Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I know they didn't want to lend a ship to the studio. Right. They had to borrow one from the French.
Well, and Tony Skit, stop with the accents. You're failing miserably today. Tony Scott actually went to Pearl Harbor and filmed the real Alabama just happened to be taken off. So he used a helicopter and shot it.
Oh, nice.
Illegally. Illegally, and they got ran off. They got ran off by the military police, but they already got their footage. So
that's awesome.
You know, hey, do what you got to do as a film director to get what you want. Because they did shoot. There was location shooting. Some of this was shot in Pearl Harbor. So they did some of the illegal shooting there. but this movie is, it's got an intensity to it that builds and builds and builds throughout the film. And then we get to those last 45 to 50 minutes of the movie. Man, you can't stop watching it. It's so good. It's so well acted. Tony Scott does a fantastic job with his direction of making that intensity seem even tighter because it all takes place in a submarine. And then Hackman and Denzel just chew up the screen immensely with their performances in this. Hackman plays such a great... Well, what's the word asshole? I'm looking for here? I wouldn't even say he's an asshole. Because... It's not so much he's, yeah, but he believes in what he's doing, yeah. You know? But does that make him an asshole or does that just make him? Because it all goes,
no,
it all goes down to that.
Very final, realistic.
Yeah.
Very relatable.
It goes down to that final scene where they tell each other, well, you were right, I was wrong. And it's kind of an inside joke because they both believed in what they were doing, you know?
Yeah.
It makes me think about that scene where, you know, Denzel's character. Hunter, you know, witnesses a fight and he's like, hey, some of the guys, you know, might be low on morale, you know, they're just kind of on edge. And so he's like, might be good to give him a pat on the back. And Gene Hackman's like, all right. He's like, and then he's like, if any of you guys can't handle this situation, you can jump off the ship and cast your life to the sea. You bastards, we're at war.
He didn't say that.
No, but that's how I took it.
He said, if you don't like it, then you can get off the ship right now.
Yeah.
He didn't go off. Come on, man.
Hey, I know, but I was dialing it up to 20.
But he isn't a psychopath, Matt.
No, but he is. He is very much a realist, like you guys said. You know, he has. We are at war. You know, and just basically stressing that, hey, this is what happens when you're at war.
Yeah, it's funny too because I would say about the scene with the fight. There is a Tarantino connection to this movie. They brought him in to look because at this time, Tarantino had made Pulp Fiction, but he also was still working as a script doctor too. And he was friends with Tony Scott, you know, of course, who directed True Romance for him. And Tony had him look at the script, and Quentin said, honestly, the script doesn't need any work. He thought it was really good, but he did add the comic book dialogue into the fight scene. That was all. That was Tarantino adding the stuff about the Silver Surfer.
Nice.
Did he do the ones about the horses too?
He may have. I didn't see anything about it, but he might have.
Yeah, I think he did. I think the horses dialogue in the one of the final scene, was added by Tarantino.
And interesting note too, you know, they set the timer for 60 minutes at the end of the film until they believe that the Russians are going to launch. And the movie basically takes place almost in real time, those last 60 minutes. It all comes down. Man, we forgot Viggo Mortensen's in this movie before he ever played Aragorn, you know, and he plays the weapons. The only guy in the ship that has the safe key to the nuclear launch codes.
And he has to spar off against Gene Hackman, too. Gene Hackman's like, give me the codes. And he's like, there may be a moment when the courage of men fails, but it is not this day. You know?
God, I want to slap you.
I'm glad we're virtual.
Yes.
The secret, Mark, is to ignore him.
It's hard.
Otherwise, you're fighting the troll.
But yeah, anyway,
a young Viggo Mortensen appears in this film, and he's actually really good. The whole cast in this movie is actually very good. Of course, it's a Jerry Bruckheimer, Don Simpson production, and they were known for a lot of flashy action films in the 90s and 80s and 90s. These are the guys that brought us Top Gun, Days of Thunder, The Rock, Con Air, you know, a lot of those movies. And man, but a lot of them are really great action films. And I don't even know if I call Crimson Tide an action film as much as it's a character film, but it feels like an action film because it's shot so kinetically. Like, you know,
I do like that one action sequence with the, you know, enemy submarine. And I felt like that showed that Denzel, even though he's young and maybe not doesn't have the experience, he can run the ship and he can, you know, he can be suited for battle.
Oh, absolutely.
Little fun fact about the USS Alabama. It is part of a class of submarines called the Ohio class nuclear ballistic submarines. It is the U.S. Navy's largest class of submarines ever built. And then the Akula is actually a actual class of Russian submarines. They're considered the fastest submarines, nuclear submarines ever built by any Navy. So, yeah. But anyways,
That's cool.
Naval history buff there.
So long. You said you hadn't watched this since maybe when it came out. It still holds up for you?
Yeah. It holds up pretty well for me. There are some moments that kind of stick out to me like, oh, okay, this is definitely 90s style editing, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're in the dark and then you see the images of the monitors projected on their faces. You know, like you see the radar design on their faces, you know, what they're watching. This is for dramatic effect. It's kind of a little cheesy. I saw Ryan Phillippe in the background there before he became famous. Who else was in there? James Gandolfini was great. He plays such a great annoying asshole, huh?
I was even thinking towards the end of the film when he's holding the gun on Hunter, and they do a close up of his face, and he's got like this evil, like I just want to shoot you look at his face. It's like really kind of evil looking.
Yeah. But you know, other than that, I'm surprised it held up pretty well, and Gene Hackman, man, it just makes me miss the actor even more.
Yeah.
And I think the last movie he was in was, what, The Royal Tenenbaums?
Right? That might have been.
Yeah, that was the last movie he ever did. And then he said the filming of that movie was so horrible, he just decided to retire. Even, yeah, I don't think The Royal Tenenbaums was a bad movie, per se. It was just a difficult movie to get through. But, yeah. Denzel Washington went on to have a great career. So did Viggo Mortensen. There were some faces I might... Jason Robards, little cameo at the end. And a couple of Easter eggs and callbacks to famous submarine movies. They were quoting Run Silent, Run Deep, and then
that
Clark Gable movie.
That was Tarantino also. He had that.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were also talking about the other submarine movie called The Enemy Below with Robert Mitchum and Kirk Juergens. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of funny because submariners actually talk about submarine movies too while they're on duty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Kept it accurate.
Yeah, and I have a friend who's a former naval submariner, and yeah, I mean, he talks about how they talk about other submarine movies and how they're unrealistic or realistic. Or, I mean, they wouldn't have gotten into the submarine service if it weren't for those movies.
Right.
So, yeah, but anyhow.
Hackman's last film was Welcome to Mooseport.
Oh my God!
Oh, really?
Welcome to Mooseport. Okay. Was that the one with, Ron or...
I don't know.
You know, the dude, Raymond. Is that the one with Raymond?
He did Runaway Jury, Behind Enemy Lines, and The Royal Tenenbaums. Those were his last four movies.
Yeah.
But yeah. But, this is a movie that I really like Crimson Tide a lot. I saw this in theaters, and it's a movie that if I'm passing through cable... while I still have cable, because I'm really thinking about unplugging at the end of the year, that if it's on AMC or something, I usually will stop and watch this movie. Because I do think Crimson Tide is pretty good. Hackman and Denzel are so good in it. And they make the movie work, them going at it with each other. And those last 10 minutes or so are just like, what, you're literally on the edge of your seat. Like, what's going to happen, you know?
That's how I felt. I felt like, you know, even though there wasn't a ton of explosions and a ton of submarine warfare, I felt like I was on the edge of my seat the whole time with the whole mutiny.
Had you seen this before, Matt?
I think my dad had it on, and I was trying to watch some of it whenever it was on, like, Turner Classic Movies or something, or AMC. It was on one of those channels, and I don't remember much of it. So it was basically my first time seeing it. Really, because first time I saw it, I didn't pay much attention to it.
Yeah.
But I was on the edge of my seat. Just, you know, are they going to launch? Are they going to make the wrong move? What happens?
The submarine was sinking deeper and deeper.
Oh, my God. Yeah. When they're like, if we get to 1685, we're done for. And he had to make that call. You know, Denzel has to... You know, he has to mature really fast. He had to make a call that, you know, trapped three men, you know, in the lower level just so that he could save the rest of the ship.
I might argue that this could be Tony Scott's best film, you know?
Yeah.
He's done a lot of good stuff. Like, I'm a big fan of True Romance, but True Romance is a little bit more crazy all over the place. This is a tighter, focused, more intense film. In a different way, you know. And Tony made some good films in his career, so that's a tough one. But this might be one of his best.
Yeah. But, did he do Top Gun?
He did Top Gun also. Yeah, that was Tony Scott.
Yeah. Yeah. And Man on Fire.
Yeah.
Oh man, I loved Man on Fire.
That's a good
one. Yeah, but Man on Fire is good. But like, I recently it was on TV and I rewatched it. Like, It's edited a little messily, like when you rewatch it now. Like, I guess I didn't notice that when I watched it back in the late 90s, but I went and rewatched it. And I'm like, it's kind of a mess editing wise. But it's a pretty good film too, though. You know, interesting note on that movie. Denzel's not a big fan of Man on Fire. he thought it could have been better. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little interesting note. But I give Crimson Tide. I think this is an easy A and pretty solid A for me. I think the actors make this movie, the intense story.
Yeah.
Same here.
Easy A. Easy.
A all the way.
Straight A's.
Straight A's. That leads us
into our top five this week. Watching Hackman and Washington go at it on screen got me thinking about other great actors that go at it on screen with each other in a face-off style where they're not necessarily a face-off gun-to-gun, but throughout the film where they're clashing with each other. So we decided to do our top five actor movie face-offs. I don't know what to officially call it.
Yeah.
I'll start it, I guess, since I haven't really started one in a while. At number five, I have another Gene Hackman movie. I have Gene Hackman and Clint Eastwood in Unforgiven. Little Bill and Money going after it. The clash that comes down to the end of that film is as intense as this movie we just talked about. A classic. We still have not done Unforgiven on the podcast, but I think eventually we will because it's such a great film. But that's my number five. Eastwood versus Hackman in Unforgiven.
I'll go next because I trust Long to have the best pick of us all, and I want to save him for last. I had to work a comedy
that's
in here.
That's a lot of faith.
And I think it is a very memorable exchange when Will Ferrell and his stepbrother, okay, Dragon, well, face off amidst the drum, the touching of the balls to the drum, and the fight ensues.
Okay, man. That's great. I'm going to bring us back up to a sensible
respectable level,
I guess. Respectable. That Matt has a obsession with Skeet. No. Skeet. No, I'm joking. Five. It's a old 1960s movie. It's called Inherit the Wind. And it's Spencer Tracy versus Frederick March. And it's a courtroom drama movie about the Spokes Monkey Trial, where a teacher was put on trial for teaching evolution. And this is a courtroom drama between how religion shouldn't be, running education versus the teaching of science. It's a very good movie, and it's a great debate type movie. Spencer Tracy versus Frederick March. If you haven't seen it, fantastic dialogue. But yeah, it's based on a true story too. So
I have heard of it. I've never seen it, but I have heard of it.
Yeah.
At number four, I have Kirk versus Khan in Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan.
Nice.
I mean, we've done this movie on the show. Great.
But which one though?
The original Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. Shatner versus Ricardo Montalban, the sexiest man alive. And it's just so good, man. At the end of that film, when they're trying to blast each other out of the sky, and one of the great villains on screen, because sometimes people forget that a villain truly believes in what he's doing. And maybe they don't go about it the right way, but Khan is one of those villains. He believes in what he's doing. He believes it's the right thing. And does that necessarily make him wrong? Maybe not. It depends on how you look at it. But those two guys, Kirk vs. Khan and Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, very memorable.
Well, we were talking about Kevin Smith earlier, and it made me think of the argument between Randall and the Lord of the Rings geeks in Clerks 2. What say you, Mark? Whenever I thought Sam was going to tell the little hobbits to take a walk, that little comment.
I've only seen that movie once, Clerks 2.
Long wish number four.
Okay, number four. Mark's just going to let him sink.
Okay. Yeah, he's already dug a 10-foot fucking hole.
Oh, don't worry, I'm coming back up.
Okay, number four. It's another dramatic movie, another biopic too. This is one scene from the movie called Lincoln, directed by Steven Spielberg. And it's a scene between Abraham Lincoln and Thaddeus Smith, played by Tommy Lee Jones and Daniel Day-Lewis.
When now,
these
the
two
room.
Actors.
When they're in the big room, right? Yeah.
With, yep. Yeah, when they're in the basement and they're talking mm-hmm. about how they should free the slaves. And it was just a really great, very good scene. Yep. And the one line where Thaddeus Smith says, "Well, I'm going to point towards north, and we're going to go pointing towards north because it's the right way to go." And then Lincoln retorts by saying, "Yeah, you can go true north all the way, but you don't account for all the swamps, the mountains, the cliffs, you know, all those obstacles along the way." Mm-hmm. And it's a great rebuttal on Daniel Day-Lewis's delivery as Lincoln on that.
That is
but that's my number four.
That is a great scene.
Yeah, very good.
And number three, I started thinking since we talked, we got to see Michael Biehn today, The Mandalorian. Tombstone. I have Wyatt Earp. He has two great matchups in this film, against Ringo and against Curly Bill. As Earp faces off against Curly Bill and his cowboys and tries to save the town of Tombstone, one of my all-time favorite movies, and just some great performances, and one of my favorite actors of all time, Kurt Russell, playing Wyatt Earp and taking on Ringo and Curly Bill.
Yeah, good rivalries in that movie. Mm-hmm.
For number three, I've got True Romance, that scene between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken. Just the exchange when Hopper is just tied up and he knows that he's just fucked.
You're part eggplant.
Yes.
Very respectable pick, Matt.
You kind of
redeemed yourself.
I told you, Matt, like the submarine, I went down, I'm coming back up. Right?
Right. You're surfacing. You're surfacing. Yeah.
Bring me up to Periscope.
You're a Periscope death.
Yes, right? Periscope death.
All right, so number three, it's a Netflix movie, and the movie was called The Two Popes, and it stars Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce, and throughout some of the movies, they debate over several issues where Jonathan Pryce plays Pope Francis and Anthony Hopkins plays Pope Benedict. And Pope Benedict was kind of like, well, I want to run the church by the book, while Pope Francis is like, well, I want to rule the church according to, you know, Jesus' scriptures, and it should be a starting point, not the be-all, end-all. And then, but it's a very, very good movie. I highly recommend it. But just watching Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce basically chew up the scenery between the two, I highly recommend it. Two very good UK actors in that movie.
I've been meaning to watch that film. I heard good things about it.
It's a very good movie. It touches on some issues about some things that Pope Francis felt guilty about and whether he felt worthy of being called a pope, you know, and then how even though Pope Benedict was different from Pope Francis. There's a scene in there that's very powerful. That's worth it. But anyways, the two popes, that's my number three as far as character face-offs.
And number two, I have my third Western on the list. And that is Monco versus Mortimer in A Few Dollars More. Watching Clint Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef go at in that movie is all-time classic. They're out trying to outsmart each other the entire film. We just did Good and Bad and the Ugly recently, but the Good and Bad and the Ugly, Eastwood and Van Cleef aren't on screen as much as they are together in A Few Dollars More. And it's just classic, man. It's I've said many times on the show before how much I love watching Lee Van Cleef do his thing. And Eastwood does a great job, too. And that's my pick for number two.
I put this movie at number two. I felt like this was one of the most heated exchanges I've seen on film in a long time. Just them sparring, basically jousting back and forth, just you know, trading blows, you know, threatening to throw one into a, you know, and into contempt and throwing the other person into contempt. And, you know, you arrest him, you demote him, replace him. No, you can't replace me. And it's just firing back and forth. And
what movie? I was
really entertained. This movie, Crimson Tide.
Oh, Crimson Tide. Yeah. Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, you're good.
That all you
yeah, that was about say? It. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, fiery okay. exchange. Yeah.
Yeah. Between a young actor and a veteran actor too.
Yeah.
There you go. My number two is actually another old movie from the 1960s, and it's 12 Angry Men. And basically Henry Fonda versus 11 other jurors, and it's just one man trying to convince the other jurors to not, you know, sit on a verdict so easily. And throughout this movie, it's one movie, one scene, and set in one room throughout the whole movie. And he's just watching. It's just fun watching one guy convince an entire room to think critically, and you know, that would be a big consequence to a young defendant's life.
Yeah.
But 12 Angry Men.
He had a knife Henry pulled on him and everything.
It's funny because. Yeah. That's such a great movie. And a little bit, a note here. It's like, if y'all seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington too, right?
Yeah.
With Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
Could you imagine, like, would a movie like that even work today? Maybe a guy like Tom Hanks could do it. But now your audiences, though, they expect flashier editing. They expect, you know, I wonder if an audience would even take to a movie like that nowadays, you know? Just something to think about. But like
has to be a very good actor to do it.
A very good actor, like a Tom Hanks type, could do it. But yeah, it'd be interesting. Yeah. And number one, you'll probably know what it is from my text message earlier, but my favorite two actors, well, not my favorite two actors of all time, but is John Woo's Face Off, getting to watch Nicolas Cage and John Travolta trade blows throughout the film as Sean Archer and Caster Troy. I think the movie is incredibly badass. Every time I watch Face Off, I find Cage and Travolta so damn entertaining in this film, trying to play each other. And I love it. And I don't care what former host Frank says, how Face Off is unrealistic. It's a movie. It's supposed to be unrealistic. I love the film. I think it's fucking awesome. And it's the closest John Woo film we ever got for American audiences to his Hong Kong stuff. And I love it. Sean Archer, John Travolta versus Caster Troy, Nicolas Cage. Hell yeah.
Hell nice. Yeah. Stone Cold would give that a hell yeah. That's a hell yeah.
I'm waiting for a Stone Cold and the Rock movie. Movie. What's your number two, Matt?
My number two is A Few Good Men, the exchange between...
We're on number one.
Yeah. Oh, it's number one.
Number one. A Few Good Men. The exchange between Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson over Santiago and whether he was left to die and what the truth was, and he couldn't handle the truth. It's one of the most quoted lines ever, you know, from a heated debate.
Yeah, but what's funny is about that movie is so much more. That one scene is like a minute and a half, you know?
Well, there's an exchange between him and Demi Moore too.
But people always remember that scene because of the trailers and the way the movie was marketed, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. My number one, it's actually my number one, and then I have a second movie that kind of relates to it. But, my number one pick is Heat. Between Robert De Niro versus Al Pacino. It is their first serious on-screen work together. Even though they have one scene where they have their moment in the cafe, but throughout the whole movie, it's a battle of wits and, you know, cop versus robber type deal, and how they outsmart each other. And De Niro's character is always one step ahead. But definitely one of my favorite two actors collaborating each other type movies and on opposing sides.
Yep.
Heat.
One of the absolute best gun battles of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's. Have y'all done Heat yet as a retrospect?
No.
Yeah. Maybe. 2021, but we'll fit it in somehow.
The cops actually use that shootout scene as training on how to, you know, return fire while backing away from your shooter.
Kind of related to this a little bit, The Irishman has a fantastic scene between Joe Pesci and Pacino. Mm-hmm. It's only a 2-minute scene, but man, it's just one of those two actors that are very good at turning the intensity up. But for Pesci to play a more reserved character, but dangerous, and Pacino to play Jimmy Hoffa, it's a very good scene from The Irishman, an otherwise 4-hour movie. Mm-hmm. 2 minutes from a 4-hour movie, but it was a great moment between the two where Hoffa confronts Pesci's character about getting his union back. I did have an honorable mention before we started the top five, and it was another Michael Mann movie, Public Enemies, between Christian Bale and Johnny Depp. I thought that was another good crime movie too, between two actors.
I saw that one but time.
It was all right. That's an honorable mention.
If I had any honorable mentions, a movie that I want to cover on the show one day, and that's Tom Hardy versus Joel Edgerton in Warrior. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Those two guys.
That was a good one.
Not just the fight at the end, but just them being brothers throughout the movie. And it comes to blows. That's such a good movie. All right. Good job, guys. Except for Matt.
Whatever. My honorable mention is Rocky Balboa.
Balls on drum set. Well, that's the thing.
Balls on drum set.
Well, that's... There's a difference in actors and characters facing off in rivalries. Like Rocky versus Apollo Creed would be more of a rivalry. You know?
No. Rocky Balboa, whenever he's facing off against his son and telling him, you know, his son's like, oh, it's too hard being your son. I have to live in this big shadow. And he's like, let me tell you something you don't already know.
Yeah, but that's just a character scene. That's not really actors facing off, you know? So stop.
Did you guys ever see that movie that had Robert De Niro and Sylvester Stallone playing former boxers?
Oh, yeah, and they had to fight each other?
Grudge
match.
Grudge match.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw that movie. It was okay, you know, but it was not bad. It was basically Raging Bull versus Rocky Balboa.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there's not a whole lot of news, so we'll go through it quick. One's hardly news. I just want to make a note that fans of Ready Player One, the book or the movie, Ready Player Two actually came out today, the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's of note because it is a Texan. Ernest Cline, he lives in Austin, Texas, wrote the sequel, which has already been optioned for film. No word yet whether Spielberg's going to come back and direct. But we'll see. I kind of hope he does. I thoroughly enjoyed Ready Player One, enjoyed the book too. And I want to read the second book. I'm sure I'll pick up a copy of it eventually. So if you're interested, Ready Player 2 is now available to buy and read. We don't talk about Doctor Who a lot on this show, but there's a lot of big fans out there. And they do a Christmas special every year on Doctor Who. And for those who are interested, Jonathan Barrowman is coming back to play Captain Jack Harkness, who is a very, very popular character on Doctor Who. So it's newsworthy for those fans of that show because he has not been on Doctor Who in a few years. So the fact that Captain Jack is back has Doctor Who fans excited. And the last bit of news I have is it seems that Legendary Pictures is shopping Godzilla vs. King Kong to streaming services. Netflix offered him $200 million. They turned it down because Legendary is still partly owned by Warner Brothers, who financed 25% of the film. So Warner Brothers is trying to... looks like this thing's going to head to HBO Max, man. They said it could be like a Wonder Woman deal where it plays in theaters and HBO Max, but you might have to settle for watching your big guys fight at home, dude.
I'll believe it when I see the trailer.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't put out a trailer yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of makes me nervous, you know? And this is karma, too. This is karma for me making fun of my roommate for wanting to see the New Mutants. And then the New Mutants kept getting delayed, you know? And I was kind of making fun of him. Ha, ha, ha. Your mediocre mutant movie's never coming out. And now my roommate's probably like, ha, ha, ha. Your mediocre monster movie's never going to come out. I'm like, shut up. Shut up. Because it was originally going to come out in March 2020. They delayed it to October 2020. And then they delayed it again to freaking summer 2021. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Well, hopefully some of those delays are only because of COVID, not because the film's not
good. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So that's it. We'll see. Well, before we get out of here, let's preview next week's film, a movie that is on HBO Max, a movie that Long has never seen because he was afraid this was during Brad Pitt's Pretty Boy years, which it was filmed during that era, but Brad Pitt is certainly not a pretty boy in this movie. We're going to talk to Terry Gilliam directed 12 Monkeys.
You're a very good observer, Cole.
We have a very advanced program, something very different.
An opportunity to reduce your sentence considerably.
And possibly play an important role in returning the human race to the surface of the Earth.
License, no prints, no warrants.
But he took on five cops like he was dust into the eyeballs.
What year is this?
What year do you think it is?
1996.
That's the future, James. Do you think you're living in the future?
I am simply trying to gather information to help the people in the present trace the path of the virus.
We're not in the present now.
This is a place for crazy people.
I'm not saying you're not mentally ill. For all I know, you're crazy as a loon.
The army of the 12 monkeys, they're the ones that spread the virus.
Monkeys?
He's been living in a meticulously constructed fantasy world, and that world is starting to disintegrate.
You haven't become addicted to that dying world?
No, sir.
He needs help.
I think I'm crazy when people start dying next month. I don't belong here.
You're here because of the system.
I know some things that you don't know.
Yes, my son.
You sent me to the wrong year.
You're certain of that?
Science ain't an exact science.
You had a bullet from World War I in your leg, James. How did it get there?
I don't know.
You're a trained psychiatrist. You know the difference between what's real and what's not.
You said that I had delusions. You said you could explain.
I'm trying to.
I want the future to be unknown.
I can help you. Get you out.
We're all monkeys.
The thing mutates! We live underground!
They're watching you.
I just want to do my part to get us back on top in charge of the planet.
This is such a good film. A unique film, definitely, I think, for its time. Stars Bruce Willis in it also. Long, you're going to enjoy this, man. It's a good movie. You're
going
to like
it. I'm going in totally blind. Yeah. All I know about the movie is that it is set in a dystopian era. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Time traveling has something to do with it.
It's one of those movies that I saw in theaters and walked out really being surprised by what I watched, not knowing what to expect, and it went above my expectations when I saw it. It's been a while since I've watched this, so yeah. Have you seen it before, Matt?
No, I haven't. I bought it.
Have you never seen it?
But I haven't seen it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, so you, Mark, you're the only one who's seen it.
Two 12 Monkey Virgins.
Like a virgin.
Very interesting show next week.
For the very first time.
Until next week, remember, find all our episodes at therebelradiopodcast.com. Join our Patreon for just $2 a month. The November episode will be out this weekend. Me and Matt did The Old Guard off of Netflix. We kind of, not going to lie, we kind of threw it together, but forgive us, it's been a busy month. We're going to come strong in December and January with our Patreon picks. But until then, have a safe week. And until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the Submariner.
Thank you, as always, for listening.
Me there with your cough.
We do appreciate it, everything, the support you guys give us. And until next time, just go there and do it.
And do it.
And do it.